This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy April Fool's Day, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Emily Thompson from Wellington, Florida, and you're listening to a special jumping edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 1st, episode 882. This episode is brought to you by Us Equestrian. Good morning, Horse World.
Oh, my God. It's Tuesday.
It's top-class show jumping at the very best.
Every horse is different, and you've got to be able to understand and read each different horse.
Remember, we're looking for those clears in this round to go forward to the jump off.
You can't ask for anything more. It's just pure theatre.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is April Fool's Day, but this is not an April Fool's. We are here doing our first jumping episode here on Horses in the Morning, and we'd like to welcome as co-host Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Glenn. Happy to be here. Excited for the first show.
I'm excited, too. You know, we just met Emily back at ADA, back at the American Equestrian Trade Association a few months back. But it seems like I've known you for about 10 years.
It's true. Well, we've been hanging out a lot. We went and watched The Million. We're on the phone. We're on the radio. We kind of know each other
now. And, you know, Emily, regular listeners to the show will recognize Emily's voice because she has been doing the Wellington updates for us here over the last couple of months and keeping us up to date on what's going on down in the southern part of our state, and it's been a lot of fun. And I said, well, why don't we just do a special show every month on jumping? It certainly is one of the most popular sports disciplines in the equestrian world, so we're glad that you can do it.
Yeah, I'm excited too. It's really fun. This is going to be really really cool to build just a lot of the information that we've got going on here with the different guests. I think it's going to be fun to have it accessible.
Very good. Well, let's have Jennifer tell us what is coming up on today's show.
On today's S Equestrian Find a Good Spot and Jump Tuesday edition, following a long forced ride line of what it's like to be a show jumper chit-chat, we will be joined by the man behind the science of bitlessness, Dr. Cook. And then next up, Eric Thompson stops by with a take it to the barn training tip. And then in the third half of the show, the hottest show jumper in the United States right now, Ashley Bond Clark, will stop by to tell us about her recent win at the AIG Million Dollar Grand Prix. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. You know, I'm looking forward to speaking with Ashley. We've talked to her several times. We've been following her for many years here on the Horse Radio Network, but I haven't got a chance to talk to her, one, since she got married, or two, since she's a one-third of a millionaire. So I have to I'm looking forward to chatting with her in a little bit here as well, and I'm glad to see she is doing so well. Well, Emily, tell us a little bit. Let's get to know you a little bit. We really haven't had an opportunity to do that here on the show. How did you get into horses and, you know, into show jumping in particular?
Well, I guess I got to give my mom a little credit. She was into horses. She did not do it professionally, but there was a barn in our town. And she facilitated my crazy request of wanting to start taking riding lessons. I was bugging them since I was 3-4 years old, you know, continuing on up the age. But the barn in my town, you couldn't start riding until you were 7. So it was like just waiting. I wanted to go and ride and show and be with the horse. Well, not show, actually. I take that back. I just wanted to ride. I'm that kid at the barn that just wants to hang out at the barn. But that barn in my town, it was had a show program. It had like a lesson program, but then also a show program for equitation, hunters, jumpers. So I just sort of grew up in it. That was my natural progression. I love riding. I love being with the horses. So it really started out that way. Me and my best friend Ellen, who I do the clothing line with, actually started at the same barn together. We were those barn rat kids, you know, jumping horseless horse show courses and having fashion shows with polo wraps in the lower aisle. I mean, all kinds of junk. But then
you were those kids that Jennifer and I could not get out of our barn.
Oh, God, you were those kids. We were the worst, and there was a crew of us, and I don't know where our supervision was. These days it would not fly. Well, I can share a few of our things we used to do at a later time to shed some light on it. But, yeah, we were just this rogue pack of kids. But we loved the barn and loved the horses and couldn't get us out of there. So, for me, it just kind of grew into that's what people did. It was show jumping community, horse showing. So I think
where was
this first,
at, by the way, Emily? Where was it?
Bronxville, New York. It's your first stop right out of Manhattan. It's location, location, location. It was an old dairy barn built by Frank Lloyd Wright. It is like a piece of history. Huh. The ceilings were very low. You could only jump so high in the indoor. It is still there. It's owned by the county. It's a cool place, a lot of history. But, yeah, it's the first stop out of Manhattan. So a lot of big names kind of started there.
Not as tall as you could be. You kept hitting your head on the ceiling.
Oh, God, I know. Seriously. Thank God I am so short. I was probably the only person except the camp kids that could jump in there. But on a nice short horse. Which you'll laugh
That's
when
funny
you see
that
my
it was
mom
built by
other...
Frank Lloyd Wright. I mean, how many people can say they own a barn that has that history?
I know. It cracks me up. It really does. It's cool. It's a neat place to stop. And they still have lessons. Thriving lesson program. They've really fixed it up and painted it up. It's a cool place, especially if you're like visiting, you know, in the city or have people that are visiting, you can call and get lessons. And I think they may even have trail rides these days. But anyways, that's where I started.
Did your dad work in the city? Was he employed?
Yes. Yes. Both parents. Both my parents are lawyers. My older brother is also a lawyer. I'm surrounded. They're in the city.
So you were that kid. You were that kid that didn't become a lawyer.
I'm that kid. I am that kid for sure. And, you know, things are going okay now, but they were like, what is the deal? All she wants to do is ride these horses around in circles.
And they make no money. All they're doing is cost us money.
Exactly. But they were great. They really supported me. I got pretty sick into it as a junior. I meddled. Were placed in, like, the Young Riders Championships for the jumpers, the Metal McClay Finals at indoors. You know, I went all in for the junior career. And then I decided to not pursue college education. I went briefly, and it was not for me, and went right back and declared my professional status and have been a professional ever since. My husband and I have a hunter-jumper business, Stella Farm. It's been in operation for going on 11 years now. We've been in Texas and New York and New Jersey. We've kind of been around Florida most of the year now. But it really evolved that I dedicated my life to jumping and horse sport and just a fan of horse sport in general, not just jumping. I actually went just furthering my education as a young adult, I guess maybe I was like 25 or so. I spent two summers over in Germany. I wanted to be able to, if I felt like it, you know, have accessibility to go show. You know, over there it's all on a training scale. You have to have a license to lunge a horse. You have to be certified to show and train and do anything from level to level to level. So I wanted to be able to do that. So I went over and took their course through the FN, and I'm certified with jumping and dressage and lunging.
I'm a certified lunger. Woohoo!
Not many of you carry a license, but I will have you know that I do. I can professionally lunge your horse. Not that anybody cares in this country, as they're chasing them around with plastic bags. But you know that my involvement was 100%. And so I guess about that last year that I came back from Germany was when the clothing line really started. So. It has been about 5 years now with the clothing line taking the front seat, and it just keeps growing and growing, demanding more and more of our attention and time, and it's a full family effort here. Myself working, my husband, my sister-in-law, my best friend, and I have started the company. So I do still do horses. I'm at all the top circuits. I bring them. I just do my personal horses these days. My husband and I, we show you know, we're there on the periphery, but the horse side of things is really just being led around by the clothing line right now, which is fun. It's cool. It's nice to kind of not do it as a business for a while. You get a little burnout.
I got it. Well, we'll talk more about the clothing line as we go through the show here. Now, I heard this story the other night. You don't know this, but when we were together here in Ocala watching the Million Dollar Class, Eric, your husband, told me how you guys met, but maybe you could share that story quick.
Yeah, we actually met at that barn that Frank Lloyd Wright built, the Indoor, the Dairy Barn. That was my barn that I rode at when I was a kid, little girl, did camp and everything, lessons all the way. And then when I went off as a young adult, working for other people, showing it in other areas, it was one summer is what it was. I came back to work in the summer, and Eric had taken over the show operation there. And so he was head trainer, taking kids to horse shows, you know, running the whole show. And I came in as a rider, helping school the horses and keep things going. So we worked side by side all, I guess it was about an entire summer, going to horse shows, you know, everything. And we're a little competitive, the two of us. We kind of were.
Well, he said he didn't like you at first. He told me that.
There was that. There was definitely that. But thank God our boss, both of our boss, is like my second mother. She's my barn mom. She loved me, and she forgave me for being late and some of the other things that Mr. Me and Eric Thompson wouldn't forgive me for. So we were able to smooth things over and continue. But he did want me to be a little bit more on the spot than I was ready to be at that time in my life.
Yeah, he did. That's one of the things he said. He actually warned me. He said, you know, you're doing a live show, and she has a reputation for being late for everything. So.
I'm trying to grow out of it, but it's working. I feel like I've been kind of early for you guys. I'm growing out of it.
Well, you notice, now what you don't know is normally we have, most of the regular listeners know that we get together with Jamie and we have a pre-show meeting before every show to discuss what we're going to talk about and things. And normally we do that at 8:30. With you, I put it at 8, figuring you'd show up at 8:30 after all the warnings from Eric.
That's so funny. Thanks, Eric. My husband behind me cleaning up the pieces.
When you were over, a couple questions. I do have a couple questions on what you just talked about. When you were over in Germany, was there, you know, this was, how many years ago were you there? Five?
Yeah, about 5 and 6 years ago.
Was there a gender bias in Germany then? Was that something you had to deal with in addition, or was that gone by then?
No, I mean, it's the numbers are there. It's a male-dominated sport. And I don't, you know, we didn't create those numbers. A lot of people have different ideas as to why, but that is the fact. Like our Grand Prix series down here for the whole 12 weeks, we had 82 men compete and 64 women. So it's a smaller number. Then when you shrink down the audience or whatever, if you're going to a certain barn or a certain area, I mean, it's like, it is like that. There's not that many women, it feels, that are really competitive. I don't know if it is that people aren't giving them a fair shake like that. I don't really know exactly, but it is that way. The women on top sport, it's the minority.
I always wondered about that because 99% of the horse people that we have as listeners and really that are out there, around 90% are women. I always wondered how those guys got up through the ranks to become the top of eventers, the top jumpers, because you just see when you go to horse shows, you see 90% women.
It's so true. And even our card holders, when you look at the USCF card holders, I mean, it's so true. It's like, you know, 80 or more percent women between the ages of 18 and 35 is their statistics. And then you go and look at the top classes, and the numbers are saying something different.
You know, I think that's, you know, I don't know. From just looking at it from the outside in the jumping world, I think that's changing a good bit now. Even from the looks of the class we did the other night, you know, there were quite a few women in these million-dollar classes now. So do you see that changing?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You do see the women that are successful, they are successful. So I think we've got a few women riders right now that are really good, which would be great if we could turn the tide some. like, you know, our good friend Ashley, who won the million over in Thermal, you know, that's, she does that. She's pretty consistent. So of the women that are out there, you're seeing them be consistent, and I do see a few more of these younger ones coming up. But yeah, it's noticeable. As a woman participating, I always feel kind of like the token girl in whatever group we're in.
And right now, actually, in the show jumping world, you have the celebrity side of things too, where you have the Bloombergs and, you know, the Springsteens and all of them. Who, it does seem like if you're a celebrity child, a female celebrity daughter, you're going to end up in show jumping. That is the place to be.
It's so funny, isn't it? It's always been that way. That's not something that's growing.
They don't go into dressage, and they don't go into eventing because I think they value their parts. But you know, so they're jumping. I guess it's where the glamour is in that world.
I guess so. I mean, it's I mean, I guess the next discipline that really has those high price tags on their horses is the racehorse community. You know, that's sort of a desirable circles to run in as well. But I think that it's got to have something to do with it. Is the image, you know, the sport of kings.
Right, right. You said something earlier too, and we've had this discussion on the show a couple of times, and I don't know that we've ever gotten a great answer, and I don't know there is a great answer, but in the jumping world, you said you declared yourself as a professional. What is the distinction between an amateur and a professional?
Well, amateur and professional is both must be over the ages of 18 years old. So everybody who's under 18 is a junior and holds a junior card. And then when you turn 19, then you have to either declare professional, which limits the classes that you can go in. You can only participate in eligibility for professionals, or I don't think you have to declare anything. I think you continue, your card just switches over to the amateur card, which then you've got a whole different section of classes that are only open to amateur owners that own their own horses. So the difference is a professional receives money for horse services. It's of any kind, whether, you know, boarding, training, you know, whatever. People try to fudge the rules. You see quite a few people out there jumping in the amateur ranks that, I mean, if you're really, really sticklers for it, you'd say, well, that can't really be the case because their husband is a famous horse professional. They're exposed. I mean, they're living the life. But if they
so even really if I just have a little boarding stable and I'm out there doing jumper shows, but I have a boarding stable, basically all my income comes from boarding and training, even at the lower levels, I'm considered a professional?
You are.
Okay. Yeah. Even though I'm really, you know, I'm not a professional competitor, I'm a professional in the business.
Exactly, and it just brings up a greater topic, really, that's under discussion right now, that we need to have some sort of credential, some sort of training scale or system for our riders and trainers in this country, because at the top level, it's our holes are exposed. We struggle to patch together teams for Olympics, World Equestrian Games. You know, it's a lot of times the same usual suspects out there. Whereas the Germans, it's like every time they show up, you're like, whoa, who are these for? And look at them kick our butt, because they're doing it. They've got a system, and we don't really have that. So they're trying. They've got that, you know, emerging athletes program and a couple of these different programs to cultivate and develop our professionals and horsemen of tomorrow. But yeah, it's, I think, $100 and, you know, stamp them, you got your card.
And we can add British to the Germans right now, I think. We can safely add them to that list.
Yes, they are whooping our butt week in and week out. That's for sure. Gosh, unbelievable.
And they really have come from where we were 10 years ago to where they are now. I mean, they have developed those programs. They put a lot of time and effort and money into developing those young rider programs and, you know, the emerging rider programs to really come out with the professionals that they have today.
It's so true, and it shows. I mean, to go out there and those guys, they don't win that much by accident. I mean, Scott Brash, it looks so easy. He is just, like, coasting around like he's in a training session, just whooping people in the you know, circuit finale. It's really incredible. But that's the way it should be done. I think that's less wear and tear on the animals when we have know what we're all going for, know what the objective is. And I don't know, I guess that sort of discipline appears easy. And I think that is easier on the horses.
Well, and there is more money coming into here in the United States and around the world, but especially, you know, we're going to concentrate here on the United States. There is more money coming in, and we're going to talk about that a little bit as we go through the show today. There's more prize money, which I think is helping a little bit. There are more shows, certainly. You got the boat circuits here in the winter in Florida that have helped. Bring people up to a level that, you know, is close to Europe anyway. So I think that all of those things are helping over where we were 20 years ago in this country.
Yeah, totally. It is. We're watching right now a change happening, a growth, an evolution. I think, you know, the economy has something to do with it on some of the other levels of showing the numbers, but the top sport is growing, and it's growing not only in this country, but in other countries. South America is experiencing a huge growth, and the classes and the infrastructure is going to need to support that if we are going to, you know, capitalize on this. Top horses, top riders, people wanting to show up. I mean, 90 some odd entries in the 150s, it's unreal, but these people, it needs to be a business. I mean, it can't just, there are not 100 of us that can go out there and just keep writing checks, just keep hemorrhaging money. There's going to have to be some sort of return.
I will say this, though, about the show jumpers before we get to Eric, your husband, with the training tip of the month, is that we see when you go to the local Publix here, it is the Publix that all the show jumpers use as they come down from hits. And they don't eat well. We need to improve their diet a little bit, I think.
It's so funny. I know. It's just calories. It's just calories to keep going. I know it. It's true.
There's a lot of junk food being eaten by the jumpers here in Ocala over the winter.
Yeah, I see it too. You end up feeling bad, though. I'm always like, feel like I'm preaching to people. You got to eat better. You're going to feel so much better. But everybody says, how could they tell?
I know, but they're all skinny anyway, so it's like,
it's true. It's true. Down in the bag of Fritos and the Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Mountain Dew must be the most sold drink at HITS. It has to be.
Yeah. It's so bad for you. I mean, isn't it illegal?
That and coffee.
In the other countries?
Is it illegal?
It's bad.
Does it test, by the way, Mountain Dew? I don't know. Might.
I know. It might. It might. One should wonder, I think, when your drink is like you've got day glow.
Well, let's why don't you introduce our next guest?
Okay, so we have calling in my wonderful husband, Eric Thompson, my co-trainer at Stella Farm, and he is going to be calling in with our training tip.
Good morning, Eric.
Eric, you there?
Good morning. How's everyone?
Good, good. Happy you're calling in. Excited to hear you.
Very exciting.
I hear you're in the Ford Truck Sound Studio.
Well, as you know, we are actually stabled on the periphery of Wellington on the other side of Southern Boulevard. It's called Loxahatchee. And it is a little wild back here, and we have an untold number of peacocks on the property, and they will really alert you to any intruders coming onto your property, potential intruders, real intruders. It doesn't matter to them. They're not taking any chances. And so we found the best place for me to sit to do this is in the back seat of the Ford truck because it's pretty quiet. Can you hear any peacocks in the background?
No.
Is there really that much? Trouble? Is there really many peacocks?
There are so many, and they don't care that this is not their property, and they're disrespectful of any phone time or quiet time or conversation. They run that place, heels down at our place.
And there's nothing worse than peacock poop everywhere. Ugh, sorry.
You know what? We have not encountered that. I felt like there was nothing worse than, like, an enormous 5-foot wingspan screeching bird flying out of the bushes in front of my green horse, but...
Well,
peacock poop, that could be bad, too. It's all bad. The point is, peacocks and horses don't really go together. So at least you're in the Ford truck. That's authentic. You know, this is real, real horse trainer stuff here.
Well, yeah, I sort of considered a couple of training tips before I came on. And the one training tip that's not my training tip for the day that we have to employ regularly is while one of us is jumping, the other one has to be on guard to chase the peacocks away. Because like Emily says, there's nothing like cantering down to a nice square oxer and a peacock suddenly appearing from behind a bush. There's really no preparing for that.
They're quite aggressive, too.
This is not a problem that 99% of the audience has had. Maybe turkeys
exactly.
Are...
I thought maybe it was too narrow. I thought maybe it was too narrow. So I came up with what I thought was a nice broad training tip for anyone that jumps. It could be for a show jumper or an eventer doing show jumping, you know, or someone just starting out. When Emily went to Germany, I didn't take any of the courses that she did, but I would come to the end and watch their final test, and I was just blown away the first time I went because I saw 30 kids jumping a 3-foot course for their test on what were essentially German school horses. These weren't horses that were used for competition. They were just used to teach, and I saw 30 rounds go without a single stop. And I can't tell you the last time anyone has seen 30 consecutive rounds of show jumping in the U.S. without a stop. And what most impressed me were the riders' positions. And I believe it's because the dressage is such a foundation in the show jumping in Germany that there's one part about their position from the dressage that translates to the show jumping. It's very, very rare to see a German rider, or most of the good European riders for that matter, get ahead of the horse when they jump. And here in this country, I've taught thousands of hours of beginner lessons even, and we are very successful in getting people to jump probably faster than the Europeans do, because we teach everything from the two-point position, which puts the rider in a very soft position in front of the jump, and they are able to stay with the motion as the horse jumps, because the last thing we want to do is interfere with the horse when the horse is trying to jump the jump for us. However, the two-point has had an unintended consequence in that we have a very bad habit in this country of getting ahead of the motion. Most riders, if you could slow down the video and watch frame by frame, the riders are generally a second ahead of the horse's motion. What I mean is when the horse starts to initiate takeoff, meaning he's lifting his front legs off of the ground, which is the place where the horse is probably most vulnerable in their thinking, then the rider has beat the horse to the jump with their upper body. So we have a very simple exercise that we do as professionals. We practice it regularly. We do a lot of trot jumps, number one, which is excellent for horses because it keeps them from being so picky about a perfect distance. It allows the horse to confidence when sometimes they've lost their confidence because of bad distances. So what we will do for this issue is we'll set up a very simple jump. It can be a cross rail. You can make it bigger as you go, as you feel more comfortable. And with the cross rail on either side of it, you would want to step off 9 feet and have placing rails. So just rails on the ground that would pretty much determine the takeoff being consistent every time for the horse. And once your horse has jumped through this a couple of times, just trotting back and forth, what you want to do is we're going to settle into the two-point, but not such an exaggerated two-point. If you've been riding for a while, you really just want to be in really a same ready position that any sport would play. If you analyze the ready position for hockey or tennis or football or baseball, it really should be the same as your position riding to the jumps, meaning your shoulders are slightly forward, your knees are above your toe, and your hips are above your heel.
And as you go to the jump, once your horse has gotten comfortable and you're comfortable, this takes a little faith. But when you're on your way to the jump, when you're about 10, 15 yards out, close your eyes. Closing your eyes will deprive you of that primary sense that you're operating off of, which is your sight. And your eye is telling you when the horse is going to leave the ground. And as a rider, it's almost impossible to not anticipate that and try to get a little bit ahead. The first time you do it, it's going to be pretty scary. But as you do it, you get more and more comfortable, and these other senses start to develop. Your sense of feeling, when the horse changes the center of gravity, they need a second. They don't need the rider influencing them so much. They need that rider simply supporting the balance. So as you're going to the jump, you're going to not want to do it, but close your eyes just a little bit in front of the jump. The takeoff distance is already measured out for you. You're trotting this exercise. Let me make that very, very clear. This is a trot exercise, not a cantering exercise. And the horse, as they leave the ground, will appreciate the fact that the animal is initiating the change in the rider's position rather than the animal having to accommodate the rider changing his or her position abruptly and often too soon. So that's my training tip for the month. And the one thing that everybody should remember is one very simple thing, that being a horse trainer means listening to your horse. You want to take the time to understand your horse first. And in this sport, we use horses as vehicles a little too much, and I'd like for people to just take a second and really listen to their horse today as they're riding.
That's great. That's a really, really good one. I like that one a lot. I actually did not know what the training tip was going to be. We let this be an exciting surprise. So I was excited to hear it. That is great.
That wasn't me.
That was interesting.
What was that?
That wasn't me. I'm in the soundproof fort.
Me neither.
That was the cheering crowd post tip. It's very interesting,
awesome.
Eric, that you mentioned how the form of, particularly in this case, the American rider has changed over the years. If you watch, and YouTube is a wonderful thing for this, if you look at video, in this case Super 8 film, of riders in particularly hunter and equitation classes, and you put it on there and slow it down so you can watch it in slow motion, you're absolutely correct. The position of the rider on the approach and the takeoff 50 years ago is very, very different than what it is today. And then the landing, the same thing. You don't have the horses landing 50 years ago, landing in a heap and having to recover on landing like you do in so many cases, particularly in hunters in this day and age. And it's very interesting that you have kind of nailed down the origins of that effect is really in the approach. So now I'm going to have to go back and watch the videos some more and practice my 2 points some more, because I know mine sucks. So thank you very much for giving me more work to do, Eric. I appreciate it.
Yeah, really. All of us. That's a good one, because it's good for people of every different level of riding. I mean, that's something that, I mean, we ride up through National Standard Grand Prix. We do that, and it really sorts out our position after a down season, after a few weeks off. And then it's great when you're just getting started. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Thanks. Well, we call it the Pop-Tart. We call it the Pop-Tart syndrome. So you don't want to be a Pop-Tart whenever you're going to jump with the horse. You know, like when the Pop-Tart comes out of the toaster. You know, you want to just be subtle on the back of the horse and let the horse think about his job, not think about you.
Totally, that's a good one.
Eric, if you don't mind, Eric, I'm not going to practice this one, because in a carriage we try not to do the jumps. It never works out.
No
Pop
Tarts,
no.
For sure.
No, no Pop Tarts either. That never works out well either.
You could do the wave. That could be your Pop Tart.
You could probably eat a Pop Tart in a carriage, couldn't you, though?
Yes,
really.
We do. And drink a lot of alcohol. Both of those things, yes.
Oh, so funny. So funny.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. See you next time.
Wow, he does a great. Now I can see why he's a trainer.
He is good. He's really good, and he's Mr. Analytical. He's got theory, and he'll talk it out for you, walk you through stuff. He's a really good trainer, which is it's been great for me because to have a partner like that, because I'm the other way. I'm like scattered and creative and expansive, and sometimes miss like you know the basics. So he keeps me sharp on the basics. So we're a good team.
I'm you and Jennifer is Eric, so I can understand and appreciate exactly what you said.
For sure. It was fun that all four of us got to hang out there at Ocala. That was really cool.
Now, he sounds a lot like, and his delivery is a lot like, are you familiar with Daniel Stewart, the psychological coach?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, he's great, and he's terrific with the psychology of riding and written a couple of books about it. We have him on occasionally, but Eric actually sounds a lot like him when he's instructing, and his cadence and everything reminded both of us, Jennifer and I, and of Daniel Stewart, and that's a good thing.
That's cool. That's great. That's really good. Well, yeah, he has that delivery. Very methodical.
Well, we have to get to our first guest. Why don't you introduce Dr. Cook?
Awesome. Okay, so we have, which I'm very excited about, this is a product that Eric and I have used extensively and are just thrilled to be able to showcase it and get the science behind it. So we have with us Dr. Cook, Robert Cook, PhD professor of surgery emeritus at Tufts University, Massachusetts. He's a veterinarian who for most of his career since graduating from the Royal Veterinary College of London in 1952 has been a faculty member of clinical departments at schools of veterinary medicine in the UK and the USA. He is the author of two books for horsemen, Specifications for Speed in the Racehorse, The Airflow Factors, and Metal in the Mouth, The Abusive Effects of Bitless Bridles. Go to Dr. Cook. Great. Welcome, Dr. Cook. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about your fabulous product, the Bitless Bridle.
Well, thank you. I'm more interested in talking about the science behind the product rather than trying to push a product. You understand?
Yes. That's what we want to hear. I come to it a little bit backwards. I come to it from finding the product and using it extensively and sort of uncovering some of these things just in the field myself.
Well, that's the best way.
It was exciting, but to go back and read the science behind it, it is really incredible how much evidence there is. It's really impressive.
Yes, it's been building up for 5,000 years. the evidence has been accumulating for a long time.
Hasn't it?
Yes.
Well, I encourage people to go and dig deeper into, there's tons of articles and all kinds of literature about it. Please go onto the website. But Dr. Cook, you're here. We don't have a ton of time. What would you like think is the most compelling evidence, really, to share the science, something that you would like to share here?
Yes. Well, I think a good topic and the one that I really wish to emphasize is the topic of safety, because much can be done to make riding and driving a great deal safer than it now is, and accidents can be avoided. And maybe the first thing that we need to get rid of is a myth, and that is that the bit controls a horse. It does not. Horses have been bucking, bolting, balking, and rearing for 5,000 years through history, and pretty well every horse you've ever seen bolt has a bit in its mouth. So let's get rid of this misconception that you're safer with a bit. It turns out as a result of the work I've done in the last 15 years in particular, but I've been at this for the last 60 years in science, it turns out, and this is something that has been a surprise to me, that the bit is the most common cause of accidents. So this little instrument, this device that we stuff in a horse's mouth, is the cause of so much trouble. It's not the cure, and it's certainly not the control that people think it gives them. So if people have a sort of inbuilt fear of of giving a bitless bridle a trial, they should relax and enjoy the thought that they will be so much safer and a great deal happier if they dispense with a bit, not to mention that their horse will also be safer, less likely to damage itself or the rider, calmer, and be able to perform better. The bit, amongst many other things, prevents the horse from performing. It's a tremendous handicap for an athlete to have a piece of metal in its mouth. We couldn't do that. Human athletes couldn't do that, and neither can the horse.
It's so true. I mean, just the perception of it. I'm a show jumper. We're sort of, this is not a new product, but it's something that we're trying to get awareness about in the show jumping community. I really believe in it. I've used it tons on many different types, my husband and I both. But the biggest thing you do, you run into people who just can't get over the idea of it. They look at it. They see that you're riding, you're jumping, you're stopping, you're turning. It's more than effective. Of course, it's happier, but they still, people need to shake that idea. You know, there is that fear element that they think they're going to lose control, and it's just not the case.
Well, exactly, and just need to keep on gently reassuring people that they are going to be a lot safer and a lot happier if they don't have a bit in the horse's mouth. It's especially important. I mean, it's bad enough if an adult gets injured, but if a child gets injured, I mean, how tragic is that? And children should not be required to use a dangerous device. And it's, I mean, the rules that mandate in pony club work and 4-H work and so on, rules that mandate the use of a bit, are equivalent to requiring children to use live ammunition when they're playing cops and robbers.
So it really, I mean, it is that night and day when you have the experience going back and forth. And like I saw in some of your studies, which is fascinating, they use the same horse, which is my experience as well, as horses inside
yes.
my program going
yes.
back and forth. And,
yes.
I mean, you just,
yes.
I'm sold.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, that's the essence of the scientific method, really, is to have a control. And if the horse
yeah.
is its own control, you have the same horse first with a bit and then without a bit. This is such a compelling piece of evidence. And as you saw, I conducted an experiment back in 2008 at the horse CHA conference with four horses, which had never previously been ridden in a bitless bridle, and I devised a dressage test that four horses would did this with four volunteer instructor riders. It was a 4-minute test with a bit in their mouth for the first time, and then without any delay we took that bitted bridle off that horse and put a bitless bridle back on. Put a bitless bridle on for the first time, and without any opportunity for the rider, the same rider, to get accustomed to the bridle, and certainly no opportunity for the horse. The horse then did the same test, the same 4-minute test, and the whole experiment was independently judged by Mitzi Summers, who has 25 years experience as a judge. The scores changed from, I think it was 34 when bitted to 65 when bitless. And
wow.
The average improvement in the four horses in their scores was 75%, and that in the very first 4 minutes that those horses had ever experienced being in a bitless bridle, and for that matter, the riders too. So
yeah, you know, that's really the big, that's the thing, is that it does speak to the horse's natural sort of makeup. We use it on
yes.
a lot of babies, some of the saddle
yes.
breaking, and that really strikes me. I read that in your article, and I thought, you know, that's really
yes.
something that we've dealt with. It's fascinating. They pick up on it right away, which is not the
case
with a
bit. The horse,
really,
as you say, the horse picks up on it immediately. The rider
yes.
takes a couple of minutes longer sometimes.
Yep.
Most riders are just convinced by it and just cock-a-hoop and happy on day one. As far as the rider is concerned, there is one downside. I say one cost. Yes, there are plenty of costs. There are 200 unwanted behaviors and and the fear of getting damaged and even killed. Plenty of costs. There's only one benefit. I'm getting my sides muddled up here. But the benefit being, if it can be called a benefit, is the eligibility to compete because of the stupid rules. Yes.
It's so true. And that needs to be our focus because this, like I said, is not a brand new product and it's a little ridiculous that it hasn't been accepted sooner, being that it takes such a short period of time to affect change in the animal. As the studies show, there's no lack of evidence. So that's my mission for sure is the awareness for the federations to take note of this.
Hey, guys, didn't I just see that there was a country that, and I believe in dressage, right, that just made it legal for a bitless
front? Absolutely, yes. Yes, yep. The Dutch have led the way, and bless them. They approached this in a very logical fashion. It was suggested to them years ago through somebody in Holland that I've been working with and, as it were, introducing to the science. And this lady, Madeleine Kalkern, succeeded in persuading the Royal Dutch Equestrian Federation to give it a try. And that's the essence. And in their wonderful, logical way, they set up a 3-year trial during which people were allowed to compete in a separate section, a bitless section. So they gave it a very responsible sort of look for 3 years. Judges were introduced to the idea of judging a bitless performance, and the judges began to realize that their standards of judging were no different from what their standards were for a bitted performance, and so that cleared away one complaint that other judges might have. And then after 3 years, they made the rational decision to say, right, we've done this for 3 years. There's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't make this official. So now they've passed a rule which actually comes into action on April the 1st of this year, by which all riders in the first 2 levels of dressage can compete with bitted riders on a level playing field.
A transition's a transition, right? I mean, a walk's a walk, a trot's a trot, a pee-off's a pee-off.
Yes.
Whether you have a bit in a horse's mouth, it's not really affecting, it's not affecting what the judges are looking at, what the rider's doing or the legs are doing or whatever.
That's right. The
part I never got about this is, we're on this mode, thanks to PETA recently, of making, of trying to make horse sports safer. That's number one.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, so when they don't approve things, it's usually because we want to put another gadget on their faces or we want to add something that controls the horse even more. Here we're taking away something. We're not adding anything.
Exactly.
We're taking away something, and I don't understand how taking away something can be a negative.
Well, the sort of...
Does that make any sense? I'm sorry if I don't make any sense.
I agree with you. I'm just sort of perplexed.
The common argument on the other side of the traditionalist is that it would be unsafe to take the bit out of the horse's mouth. And we get back to the myth that I spoke about at the start of this interview. They are convinced, in other words, that the bit controls the horse, and they think that they will be letting themselves in for mayhem, chaos, and litigation if they agree that horses can perform on the racetrack or elsewhere without a bit. It's quite the other way around, of course. I mean, accidents are occurring all the time, every day on the racetrack and during competition, as the result of the bit being present. And gradually, it will dawn on them, I hope, the administrators, that they are themselves at risk of litigation, quite honestly, for requiring a dangerous device.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, for our sort of the arena that I frequent at the top sports show jumping, you know, down here in Wellington, you can watch the top in the world get out there on the top horses with the top sponsors. I mean, it's all of it. And something that has struck me over the years, and I've been guilty as well, is the new bridling fads. There's so many new bridles, bigger shanks for the jumpers. But what's happening, I don't know if they're connected, you know, more talking to you and reading more, it's making me think they are. But the wrecks that we're having these days, they're not just little ones. I mean, there are some nasty, nasty wrecks. And and it's so much, you know, with that bit in the mouth, you can feel them drop a leg or get hung up on the bar of their mouth. You know, you can feel it happen. So it doesn't take a lot of imagination to say, well, you know, we may be responsible for this at some stage.
Well, the strange thing with show jumping is, as you well know yourself, a bitless bridle is permitted for show jumping, and the paradox is that riders are not taking advantage of this opportunity. They don't have to use a bit. They do for dressage, which is ridiculous,
true.
But they don't have to use show jumping. They do for hunter jumpers, I understand, but for show jumping, no, they don't, and their horses will perform better if they take that handicap out of their mouth. They won't have the same accidents. They won't have the same injuries to the horse or themselves. There will be less wastage and replacement of horses, less chance of
better
them being
gait.
Killed, and so on and so forth. It goes on and on and on. It's an opportunity that should be taken advantage of, and it's disappointing that people just have not. I don't know why they're being so slow. I mean, the availability of a good bitless bridle has been present for 15 years. Why is it that they're not taking it up? I think again it's fear. It's a disbelief that the bridle can give them the degree of what they believe to be required, the degree of control, the degree of finesse, the ability to turn sharply, and so on.
Okay, let me address that. I'm glad you just said that. So that control, everything you just talked about, where does it come from without the bit?
Well, it comes so much more readily. I mean, to steer a horse, the cross under bitless bridle hugs the whole of the head, or can hug the whole of the head. For steering, you use one rein, of course, and you gently push, as with the palm of your hand, on the, if you want to turn left, you're pushing with the palm of your hand, the cheek piece of your horse, against the right side of your horse's face. So it's a gentle nudge in the right direction, and horses respond very well to that nudge. One of the first things that riders recognize when they first try the bitless bridle is that, my goodness, I have so much better steering. So that's so much for steering. And you agree, Emily, that you find that as well?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. It really is. It's just, I mean, it's a matter of just spreading awareness and getting people to just get over that they don't need the metal shank either on the hackamore.
That's right.
This is effective and it's better. And it's awareness. I mean, that's the objective. It is just a great product.
I think more than steering, a lot of riders are concerned about stopping.
Well, stopping too, we can come to. And so I come back to what I was saying. If you use both reins intermittently, now you hug the whole of your horse's head, and the horse seems to instinctively translate that as a polite request for slowing or stopping. And again, horses that were inclined to bolt in a bitted bridle now become calm and compliant and will stop on a dime.
So now, we're going to have to wrap here soon, but I want to get back specifically to your bridle. This is not something that you would recommend we just take our regular bridle, take the bit out, and go. Your bridle is designed a little bit differently to help with those aids.
Yes, it also prevents a rider from getting into trouble. I mean, it's an item that will avoid riders triggering problems for themselves and triggering problems for the horse as well. So it has built-in safety factors. You can't hurt the horse with this bridle. So now a rider can relax, and especially if they're not accomplished riders and they don't have an independent seat, and very few of us do, now they can go out on a trail ride or in the show jumping arena, comforted by the thought that they're not going to do their horse any harm, and they're not going to trigger bolting or rearing or any of those other frightening things. So it's a...
Yeah, you keep them, they stay supple. That's what we all want. Every discipline, we all want a supple horse, and this is truly a product to help supple
yes,
your horse.
Yes. But you also want a calm horse, and something which needs to be mentioned is that bits frighten horses.
Yep.
It's not a good idea to frighten a horse, frighten an animal as powerful as a horse, especially if you happen to be sitting on its back. if you take that bit out of the horse, now he becomes calmer and much less likely to rush his jumps, to bolt on landing, to refuse a jump, to run out, all those very dangerous episodes that can cause and do cause terrible, as you say, wrecks.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Cook. Bitlessbridle.com.
That's it. Thank you, Emily.
Check it out. Thank you, Dr. Cook. Talk to you soon.
Right.
It's interesting that this came up today because we actually did an interview last night on the Driving Radio Show with a group out of Australia who are having a battle, actually, with the Australian Driving Association. They've outlawed bitless driving at any competitions there, and so they're in a war down there about this. So it was interesting to hear. And the one thing that she kept saying, and I think that we have to keep in mind, and she repeated it about 10 different times in this interview, Emily, was that this is not a replacement for good training. You know, if you think that you take the bit out of your horse's mouth, your horse is going to become instantly trained, you're wrong. And she said, she attributes a lot of the negativity about bitless riding to people who thought just that. So they had these untrained horses that were now going bitless and expected miracles from them, and that wasn't happening and caused accidents and runaways and that kind of thing. And she just repeated over and over again, your horse has to be probably more trained for this than less.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because Eric and I have used it a bunch. That's why I was excited to get Dr. Cook on the air, shed some light onto his experience with creating this. And there are a lot of imitations out there, and they do not all work the same. Dr. Cook's is the best one for sure. It's the most reliable, most consistent, and it works off multiple pressure points. So what I find is when you put it on, it's very strong, and you do get response immediately. And in the same way, you know, you can pull in the right rein and go right, left rein, go left, both reins stop. It's the same. However, because it is different and they're not feeling that constant conversation in the mouth, which, as he's saying, and I found to be the case, is the cause of a lot of anxiety, you do have sort of a different horse. It's, in my opinion, a better horse, but I think if anything, you need to give it a little time to before asking for top performance. However, I do feel that it works remarkably well inside like the first 5-10 minutes. But give it a little time for you yourself, for the fit, you know, all of it. Introduce things slowly.
Yeah, like anything
interesting,
else.
Interesting, yeah. And I found when I was first introduced to it, and it was a number of years ago, and I've had people that I teach use it, it was a steeper learning curve. It was always a steeper learning curve for the rider than the horse. If you put a rider on who has experience using any given bitless bridle, and this bitless bridles do not include mechanical hackamores because that's a completely different animal, but a bridle that has no bit and works off of multiple pressure points above the bars of the mouth, above the horse's head, invariably the horse got it very quickly if the rider was experienced and it was a very good rider. If you have the same process, you put it on for the first time on a horse that's never worn it, but also a rider who has never used it, the learning curve is a little bit slower, a little bit steeper, in that the rider has to learn to ride better. And like Glenn said, it's not, it's a tool just like anything else. It's not ta-da, magically bad riding becomes good riding. No.
Yeah, totally.
But
totally.
At least you're not causing the horse's physical pain.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like it is really effective, and I think that's probably why, like you're saying, you know, that you do need to take a little time. I actually, I've been helped. My mom does ride. She's sort of an intermediate rider. She does some jumpers and hunters, like 3 foot, and she's got a nice steady Eddie horse that she rides. She's been keeping him with me for a little bit, so I ride all of my young horses, older horses, everything in the bitless bridle. So I thought, well, mom's here. She's going to ride in the bitless bridle too. We're going to see how this works. So I threw him on, and it was a little bit like that. She could tell you the same thing. It was very effective. So when she went to take a half halt, I mean, if she wasn't, you know, subtle and smooth with her at aids, the horse would shoot its head up and stop, you know, like you could stop it on a dime. So it is effective, and you do have to, like what you're saying, you almost do have to fine-tune your aids, because all of a sudden it's very clear and the horse is listening. I mean, the whole head basically goes on a pulley system vice. You have pole pressure, nose pressure, chin pressure. It's strong, but it's kind.
You have to turn the volume down on your aids a little bit.
Yeah, we had a little trouble getting into the canter the first few times, but then we got it, and then it was great, you know, and then it's like, okay, this is much better, because you do have a different horse. They're not, I didn't realize the anxiety, having a bit in the mouth, if you have one that has a funny mouth, they are immediately a little bit anxious, so you may just think that's their personality, and then with that comes a little spooking, a little tightness in the back, you know, whatever is their thing. But it was weird to put in a different, to the bitless bridle and actually encounter spooky horses to be less spooky. I was not prepared for that to be one of the results.
Well, before we get to Ashley Bond Clark, one of the hottest riders on the circuit today and one of the richest as of a couple of weeks ago, I want to talk to you a little bit about how a barn rat jumper girl who, you know, doesn't go to college, ends up in Germany, you know, wants to learn the riding biz from the masters, comes home, decides that she wants to get in the garment business. How does that work?
Oh, boy. It was about like that, too. It was a surprise. Like I told you, I was all in, show jumper, professional Grand Prix rider, want to go to the Olympics. I mean, I was in. This has been a passion of mine. But essentially I am that kid that is like cool trail riding and like just bombing around the barn. Like I'm also that kid. So I think that's why something like this really appealed to me, because the business of it, like we talked with these top riders, you kind of need to make a business out of top riding. In this country, you can't. You need to make a business out of teaching up-down lessons and short stirrup kids and clients and sales and all of these other things that really spread you thin. So the percentage of your time that's focused on your dream of competing, making your competition life a job and a reality is small. So I was feeling that frustration. Eric and I each had a Grand Prix horse. We each had young horses. We had 18 horses on the road. We had our business in Dallas, a great group of clients, good kids, but it was a lot. Most of your day is doing things that are not directly related to your riding. So that was hard for me as a side note. But then really, on the budget of the horse professional, buying clothes, I mean, buying show clothes, like they're outrageously expensive. And it became a glaring reality to me that I did not want to spend one red cent on any of the clothes that were out there. And I had myself.
We should add Emily's a little bit of a fashionista herself. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, I can't buy any of these clothes because I needed new show clothes. And we were sitting. It was before 1 week. We were in the camper at the horse show. I remember we were at a Tyler Horse Show in Texas. And Eric was like, well, you know, you have to get new show clothes. What are you going to do? What do you think you're going to do? And I was like, well, there's nothing here that's available on the market. And he said, well, he says he was doing it in jest a little bit. He was sort of, you know, trying to coax me through my sort of ass attack in the morning before the horse show. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to design one then. He said, do it, design it. Let's see if you can make something, you know, like right now. And I did. I sketched it out. It was out of a place of frustration and literally not having anything. to buy, and we started out with a show shirt, wanting to do a total 180, just overhaul on the outfit. They don't need to be dry clean only. This is a sport, for God's sakes. We can't. Nobody can relate with people in wool jackets when it's 100 degrees out. Nobody wants to watch that. So that was our sort of quest, was to overturn the show jumping outfit, and it's been nonstop ever since. But it was a little bit, it was unexpected, and it was a little bit kind of like, well, what else are you going to do? What are you going to do about this? So you don't like anything out there. We're spending too much time, you know, teaching lessons and all the other things. It was sort of a perfect storm that just had us just really wholeheartedly launch off into this direction, which I was able to have a few contacts. My best friend, Ellen Hart, my barn rat in crime, since we were, gosh, little kids. 7-8 years old. She's beautiful. You met her. She was a real model. And she has some fashion contacts. She works in Manhattan, which is where we manufacture. So it grew, you know, out of that into what it is now, which is a full group effort, and all of us, a lot of crossover. It's interesting. You know, the clothing line kind of ties in with the horses.
Well, and the business side all ties in too, doesn't it? I mean, you've probably learned a lot doing the in the garment business that has helped you on the professional rider side. They all kind of mesh and relate to each other. The lessons that you learn along the way.
It's really interesting. Yeah, they thank God they do, because it does. You know, we joke, job number two is fighting with job number one. Job number one is fighting with job number three. You know, sometimes things are not going along. Part it does feel like, you know what, these plates can all spin together. They're helping each other out.
Yeah, we know that feeling.
Yeah, but you guys do.
We definitely have had that over the years. We know exactly what you're talking about there. Well, tell everybody where they can find this clothing that you have designed and are making here in the United States.
So it is, well, you can shop online, first of all. It is S-Equestrian, ECEEquestrian.com. The full line is up there. We've got men's and women's shirts, jackets, pants. We're also on Facebook, which you can get a lot of our new up-to-date info, sponsored riders and events. And we're also available through a lot of mobile units that end up at the show jumping shows, which is maybe not so accessible for everybody, but we also have a few select styles that are sold through Dover. So you can also shop online.
Very good. Thank you, Emily. Well, our next guest coming up here recently won herself $350,000 in the AIG $1 million Grand Prix in California. Her name is Ashley Bond Clark. She also recently got married. She's been a guest here on the Horse Radio Network shows over the last 5 years, and we've been kind of keeping an eye on her. She's a lot of fun, and we were hoping that she could join us this morning before she heads off to Europe. So here is Ashley Bond Clark. Well, hi, Ashley. Welcome back to the Horse Radio Network. We appreciate you joining us today.
Of course. It's good to be here.
Hey, first, I got to congratulate you for two things. One, I'm going to take them in order of importance. One is congratulate you on being married since the last time we talked to you. So congratulations
Thank
for
you.
That.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And then I want to congratulate you for the best wedding gift ever, $350,000 check.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. I'm not going to lie.
You know, you bring that home to your newly married husband. That doesn't hurt, huh?
No, it doesn't hurt. You know, I mean, you know, luckily my family, you know, I put the money back into the farm. You know, they help the career, and so we don't get to keep anywhere close to that much, but we get a little bit, and it's very nice. It's still a very nice wedding present.
Please tell me you let the poor guy touch the check.
Of course, he's actually going to make it. He welds and uses, like, because he's a farrier, and then he creates furniture pieces actually out of horseshoes and stuff. So he's going to make a beautiful picture frame out of horseshoes to go around and put the check in.
Well, you're going to need a big
Aww.
Fireplace to put that check over.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ashley.
That's awesome. Job well done.
Yes, good job.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And tell us about this horse. You just got this horse about 6 months ago. And so where did it come from? And did you, you know, was it love at first sight? And did you think that this horse was going to do things so quickly?
You know, Tella LS, she's a Lycia. Poncho and Simon Misery co-owned her together since she was about 6 years old. I believe, she was obviously born and raised in Lycia. Abby Michon rode her as a 5 and 6 year old a little bit. And then Simon took her over, brought her to the States. And I think he rode her in Mexico for a little bit, but then brought her to the States and just took his time with her. He believed in her from the day he sat on her. You know, no one else really thought she was anything more than, you know, in the beginning a meter 30 horse. And then she did the meter 30s and was jumping clear. And then they were like, well, maybe a meter 35 horse. And then she was jumping clear. And then he did the meter 40s. And then they're like, okay, that's it. There's no way she'll be more than a meter 40 horse. And then he did the 145. So he kind of just, you know, kept proving people wrong. She was just so careful. And she's got her own kind of technique. And, you know, I've seen her for the last 2 years. And actually, it was either last year or the year before when I was on my mare Wistful, Simon did his first Grand Prix on Chella at Del Mar, and there was about 50 people in the class, and Chella and Wistful were the only ones clear, and we went to the jump off together, and Simon had one down on Chella, and I ended up winning. But I'd known the mare and always thought she was, you know, had a ton of heart and was very careful and thought that she would be a good match for me, but you know, we weren't really in the market, and Simon, I don't think he was really looking to sell her at the time. And then we were at Spruce last year, and, you know, I was at Simon's barn, and he was like, you know, I think you should sit on Chella, and I was like, okay. And I tried her, and it was love at first sight. Like, she
wow.
is amazing. We just got along right away and jumped her meter 60, and she flew, and it was just, my mom was there, my dad was there, and when my mom's there and she loves the horse, and she's like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Like, and if we have her
so
on board,
cool.
then, you know, it's really good. So, you know, we all three agreed that this was, you know, she was not super expensive at all. And we thought, hey, you know, it's definitely worth the gamble. We don't know what she can do. I felt like she could jump anything just because she had so much heart and so much go and was, you know, very, very careful. And we just got along really well. So I thought we would have a good chance. And even if she was just a meter 50 horse, that still was awesome and great and no complaints. But she definitely has, you know, done more in a very quick time, you know, and I did not, what did I imagine that I would be winning the $1 million Grand Prix? No. Did I imagine I would go clear in it? Not even maybe. You know, I thought I was very anxious the morning of the class, and I didn't know what would happen. I knew she would try her guts out because that's how she is, which also made me a little worried because if something happened, if it was too big or whatever, I knew she wasn't going to stop. So, but anyway, halfway through the round, it felt really good, and I was like, okay, I think she can do this. And she was like, I think I can do this. And then we went clear, and then in the jump off, she felt better. Yeah.
You know what, though?
So,
you know what?
Yeah.
What Ashley is kind of humble because the thing that, and we've interviewed you before, so I know this.
Thank you.
You're very humble because you act like there's no rider on board and she jumped the course by herself. you have to be able to do it, too. So just
oh, thank you.
Throw
well,
that out.
You know, it's so cool. It's fun to hear the inside scoop here on your partnership because not knowing you personally, we're kind of girls from different coasts. A little bit of an age
yeah.
difference, but I've watched you ride, and I mean, hats off to you. You've been so successful on so many different types, top sport, which is incredible given your age. But what really struck me, which now hearing this really makes sense, is there is that element, that X factor, that chemistry, which is what makes show jumping and just horse sport in general fun. And even for somebody to just pop in and watch a performance, you can pick up on that. And you guys really, really have fantastic chemistry. It's very apparent going around the course, which I don't care what your husband says about you. You have great relationship skills to be able to do that at 6 months in, put in $2 million Grand Prix clear round.
Wow, thank you. That, you know, that means a lot to hear, have you say that. And I definitely have believed that for a long time, that, you know, it's a super talented horse and a super talented rider can make a not great team. You know, I think it in the end, you to be one of those special combinations, it has to be that fit and that just like one in a million, you know, horse rider combination. And you know, with Cadet, we had that. We clicked right away. I tried him once, and it was just one of those things where we just got each other and made each other better. And this mare, it seems to be going in that direction. And I think, you know, she's younger. I got her younger than when I got Cadet. She's more fiery than Cadet was. You know, I would never take anything away from him because he was a horse of a lifetime, but I mean, and it's scary to think that maybe I just, yeah, and it's scary to think that maybe I just got another one, because literally his career I just retired him last year, and I just got her last year, and it was almost like,
wow,
it just happened. It, we weren't looking, so it's a blessing.
It is. It's a real blessing. It's a beautiful story, and it shows. It really does out there. I mean, you can see it. Are you going to show then for the Fogarty's Million? Can we see you in New York?
You know, if I had won, obviously I would have made the trip. I don't know where I'm going to be as of yet. I know for sure I'm in Europe till August, mid-August. So, you know, it just depends if I'm doing well in Europe and everything, and I'm not, you know, missing home so badly that I have to come back. You know, I'll stay there.
It is a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to watch you. I'm going to creep on you online and watch your results, because you guys are a cool pair to watch, and it's just started. I mean, how exciting is that? You guys are just getting started.
Ashley,
it's crazy.
Do you are you in Europe to? Are we trying to qualify for WAG at this point? I know why people go to Europe. I'm just trying to get a handle on what you're looking toward.
You know, I've talked to a couple people about this because, you know, of course, like every rider would love to go to WEG and the Pan Ams and the Olympics and all that stuff. We qualified for World Cup Finals. Right now, she's only coming 10, and she's really not done many Grand Prix. Like, Simon didn't, maybe he did a handful of Grand Prix on her before I got her. And I've just, you know, in July I got her, and then maybe like August or September, and I did a couple and Grand Prix on her then. So she's still relatively inexperienced and young for her age. And it's a lot. Like, I'm just going to take World Cup Finals, see how that goes. If, you know, we have a good showing there, it would be great to be one of the top 10 riders, one of those 10 riders that gets to go and travel with the teams and compete on the Nations Cups, because I think that's something she really needs to do. She's never done that. I think she needs experience with that. But I don't know. The WEG is very tough, and it's a lot for a young horse. And if I had my say, I would like to be in that top 10, do the Nations Cups, and then not do the WEG, let the more experienced horses and riders and all that do the WEG, and then do the Pan Ams, and then if everything keeps going the way it's going, you know, have a good shot to do the Olympics. And that's why I'm kind of going to Europe. I want to really give it a real shot over there for a while, and then have come back to California and have babies.
Got it all planned out. Well, if anyone,
Wait a minute. Is that human babies or horse babies?
Human babies.
Oh, got it. Okay. Just checking.
Wow.
Human babies. I'm getting older.
Not by much. Wow. Well, that's exciting to hear you look at it as an overview and a long-term plan like that, because it just, you know, a fan of the sport of show jumping. That's what it looked to me, seeing you guys as a new pair out there. Wow, this is cool. You know, they're just getting started. So that's fun to hear the inside scoop and hear where your head is, what your plans are. Very cool.
I'm trying to savor. Thank you so much. I'm trying to, you know, it's hard. Like, luckily I have aggro, and I've got three young, an 8-year-old and 2 7-year-olds that are already doing the 140 and 45.
Wow.
So hopefully I can kind of manage her and not overuse her. And she's already had a pretty intense, like, winter. So I'm giving her 3 weeks. She's chilling out for 3 weeks. She'll do the World Cup Finals, and then she'll have, like, a kind of a light month and a half after that, and I'll let Agro kind of step in and fill in for her and the other one. So, I'll play it by ear and see how it's going. She's really bloody and doesn't like to hang out and not do much. I mean, you can kind of give her a week off here and there, but then she gets a little bit restless and really wild. So,
competition.
Yeah, I mean, she's a chestnut mare for sure.
Yep. Chestnut mare with a competition horse. You got to keep her going.
Hey, Ashley, before we let you go, yeah. I have to, and I promised I'd only be 10 minutes and we're over that already, but I have to ask you, I'm America's Horse Husband, so I've got to ask you about this new husband of yours. Was he a horse guy? You said he's a farrier, so was he your farrier?
Well, no, he wasn't my farrier. He is now, of course. But he's actually, I don't know if you know who Alan Clark and Lane Clark, and Lane Clark is an Australian show jumper. He competes in California. He's a really good rider. His father, Alan, is a horse trainer, farrier. Everyone in California knows him. And Alan's his uncle and Lane's his cousin. He grew up, Sage's dad's a chiropractor and actually does the chiropractic on my horses. And he was a rookie of the year bulldogger steel wrestler when he was 17. So he's like been in horses more, I mean, he's fifth generation. So his family's been in horses longer than mine, and he's a really great horseman and knows a lot. And and my dad and his uncle introduced us in 2012 at Show Park. So we met, and then not very long after, we were getting married.
I know. I followed that on Facebook, and it was pretty quick.
It was very quick.
But it sounded like you two were destined to be together. I mean, you're just like destined.
I know, it's weird.
Well, now, so he gets the point I'm trying to get to is he gets all of this. He gets that, you know, you're on the road, and he gets the horse girl mentality.
Oh, yeah. He completely understands it. And I'm very fortunate. I don't think it's very hard being a rider or someone in this industry and not, you know, dating someone or marrying someone that at least is in part of it or understands it fully, because it's such a gypsy lifestyle. So definitely he is so supportive and completely understands everything, and it's really exciting to be able to share with your partner when something like the million happens or something bad happens, or he can really, you really feel this sincerity where he understands what you're going through, instead of just someone, oh, that's too bad, hon. You had three down. That's so sad. Okay, well, what's for dinner? It's like, no, you don't understand.
It's hard.
It's awful.
It's hard to leave work at work.
So, exactly, and especially in horses, because it's our life. It's not just work, and you understand
it's
that.
So
it really makes it better. It makes it better. Thank you.
Congratulations,
that's
Ashley. Cool. Thank you so much.
You.
Do you have a website, Ashley?
So much. Oh, I don't. I did. It was ashleybond.com, but I kind of wasn't so good about keeping that up to date. So
Facebook?
I'm going to try and get another one.
All right,
I do have Facebook, Ashley Bond Clark.
Okay, very good.
And there's a fan page that I just opened, a fan page, because I'm going to move everything over to that.
Well, thank you, Ashley, and good luck this season.
Of
we'll be
course.
Watching you.
Thank you.
Hello?
Well, she was in a good mood, wasn't she?
She was.
She was in a good mood.
It doesn't hurt.
Rightfully so.
In the million.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd be in a good mood, too.
Right. She's fun, though, because she's active and her age. I mean, it's really incredible for her to have accomplished so much at that age and on all these different horses. She's one to watch for sure this next season.
Yeah, I definitely think that she's going to be, she's not even... She's not 30. She's in her mid-20s, isn't she? Like 27, maybe?
Yeah.
I think she's somewhere around that age.
Yeah. She was like 2009 Horsewoman of the Year. I mean, she's had a lot of accolades.
Well, we are running out of time for today's show, but at the end of the show, we'd like to take a look at the show jumping news, so I'll let you take it away.
Awesome. So So we've actually got a few interesting things. A little quick wrap-up here. It is the end of the Wellington Circuit, 12 weeks of excitement, where we've got all the top sport jumping. So for our 2014 500,000 FTI Consulting Finale Grand Prix, CSI 5-star, we had an exciting win for the world's number one ranked rider, Scott Brash for Great Britain, riding Hello Sanctos. Next class we had, nice, not so predictable, I guess, right? The number two ranked rider, Ben Mayer, took home the top bonus in the $100,000 FTI Consulting Rider Challenge for his consistent success. Then we had, as equestrian rider, one of our favorites, Todd Minicus and Babalu's 41, won the $100,000 Suncast 1 meter 450 championship jumper final. That was exciting. We had Tim Gredley from Great Britain, another top rider, and Unex Omega Star won the 1 meter 50 series overall to earn the $25,000 rider bonus. And then we, as we all heard, we had our lovely Ashley Bond winning the Ocala Million. And we watched then for the, or to Thermal, sorry, but then we watched real time the Thermal Million, or Ocala Million, get won by Andre Thieme, who wins the second leg of the Triple Crown here, two of three legs. There'll be one at the end of Saugerties this summer. So that was, again, taking home $350,000. Not a
bad
day.
And he's from Germany, right?
He's German, and he won on a different horse a few years before. So he's a key player. This is a new horse, but he put in the only double clear out there in that field as we watched.
Yeah, we were watching that together, and then we watched the press conference after where they asked him, apparently when he won the first $350,000 in Ocala, I believe, when he won the first $350,000, he said he was going to build a house. And they asked him if he had ever finished the house and what he was going to do with this. And he said, well, the house got a little more expensive than we predicted, so that's what this $350,000 was going towards.
We're
so,
still building the house.
He's going to have quite a mansion by the time he's done.
I know, really. Are the horses living at this house or what?
Yeah.
What kind of house is it?
I got the impression nobody was living at this house. So I don't
yeah,
know.
Really, not yet.
But Andre can paid for his trip. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I got a question. I have a technical question on this. When you win money at these shows, how quickly do you get it?
Well, I mean, it's case by case. The idea is that I think a lot of people mail them out, you know, when they're closing the books within a week or two. I don't know the rules. There's some sort of guidelines, which a few people have ventured outside of in the last few years. It's the only reason that I know there are guidelines, because there was griping about not receiving checks in a timely fashion. But there's a window. I mean, really, some of the smaller shows, you can just apply it to your bill as you check out, which is awesome.
Because you've just spent more than you've won anyway.
As always.
And then,
how much damage?
I wonder how many people like Ashley who win these big checks and actually get a great big 4-foot check, you know, the promotional check, if they show up at the bank and go, I want to cash this. That'd be funny.
Gosh, I know. These are big problems that we may not ever know.
Yeah, I'm not going to know. I don't know, but you might have a chance of knowing that someday.
It would be cool. It would be cool. Tom's got to keep those classes coming. Keep those million-dollar classes. That's the only way we can pay the bills.
You got to keep whipping that husband to get those horses into shape. So
I know it, right? He's working double time now with me at the clothing line. Now I'm talking to you guys every day. I mean, he's really feeling it.
I know, and now he's really regretting that day. He said, well, if you don't like the clothing that's out there, you might as well just design your own.
Oh, I know. It's really. Now look what you've done.
Yes, I know. See,
now we
you
are.
Know, see, now what he's learned and that all of us horse husbands learned, it takes us years to learn this, is that when you have dumb ideas like that, you keep your mouth shut. You just because you just
it
never. Yeah, you just never bring those up because you never know what your horsewomen are going to do. So
it's
we learned
true.
To just keep. In the early years of our marriage, we always think we know it better because we're the guy, and even though you've been doing this for 100 years and we haven't, we always think we know it better. We always think we're, you know, we have the better idea. After about, I'd say it almost takes 7-8 years for you to figure out that if you just keep your mouth shut, you have less work to do during the day, and then you can play more. And it took me a long time to figure that out. It really did.
True. or a feisty bunch.
Maybe I'm a slow learner, but yeah. Less brain ideas, guys. That's the rule. Well, thank you for listening to today's show. We really appreciate it. Emily, it will be here the first Tuesday of every month with her jumper episode. If you want to list, the best way to listen to our shows is just to get our application. Go to any iOS or Android store, the app store on your phone, and just search for Horse Radio Network. Download it there. You can listen to all 11 shows that we do here on the Horse Radio Network. We have something for everybody. And you can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And you can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And you can follow Emily. That was your cue.
Yep, we are on sequestrian.com, sequestrian on Twitter.
Okay, that's spelled E-C-E, E-C-E. And that's S-E-C-E Equestrian on Facebook. That's where I follow you, and you also have a website where they can buy your good stuff there as well.
We do, sequestrian.com. Check us out.
If you want to be as stylish as Emily, and I've never met anybody more stylish that lives here in Florida than Emily, then you definitely want to check out her clothing. And as soon as she starts making men's stuff, I'll be stylish too. Yeah, okay, don't count on
that. Yeah, I got to get you a men's shirt. I can't believe I didn't bring you one, actually. We have some cool men's shirts that you will really like. That reminds me.
Got to put my little logo on it. I need my little logo
on
it.
Totally. Yeah, we should do custom shirts. We do custom shirts. We can do Horse Radio Network shirts.
Oh, there you go. Everybody that's listening right now is laughing their ass off because they know I'm about the most unstylish person you're ever going to meet.
Well,
so,
expect things to change.
I'm going to get some professional help now. We're going to have a – what was that show?
What Not to Wear.
What Not to Wear. Emily's going to be my own little guru. She's
perfect.
Tell me – you're going to be my – what was the girl's name on that show, Jennifer? Stacy. You're going to be my own Stacy.
It's so funny. Well, the good news is it's going to be really easy because it's practically a uniform. Eric and I mean, it's been years, but we love the gear. We really do wear it ourselves every day, but, you know, 7 days a week, however many weeks in a year. I mean, there's rotation. We've hit a loop, but we love it. We wear it anyway all the time.
Okay, I got news for you, though. I am not wearing breeches. I'm just not.
That was really a challenge to make any sort of pants that could potentially be crossover or even call them pants. Breeches are not pants. They're like jeggings or something. So, yeah, that was a hard one. I'll give you that.
Although, Emily, breeches are the only thing that keeps us horse husband going to shows. So we appreciate your efforts in making that happen. Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So funny. Gosh.
All right. That's it for today, everybody. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And I got to tell everybody, we'll be back here tomorrow live on Horses in the Morning. Jamie will be here. And don't forget, it is Celebrity Trivia Challenge tomorrow morning. Emily played that. She got her own taste of that, a week ago. And we have Joseph, the creator and inventor of EquityMFG.com Manure Forks, is going to be here as our celebrity. And he is offering to give away one of his manure forks. So that'll be the prize tomorrow. We'll have one of our listeners playing against him. All on tomorrow's show here at Horses in the Morning. Happy April Fool's Day, everybody. Take care.